Welcome to Blue Peg, Pink Peg, Seventh Peg. This one goes to seven, where members of the Blue Peg, Pink Peg gaming podcast occasionally talk to game designers, publishers, and industry insiders about directions, trends, and developments in the hobby we love. During this episode, we talk with Isaac Vega and Jonathan Gilmore of Plaid Hat Games about their upcoming meta-cooperative game, Dead of Winter. So sit back, relax, and listen as we talk about board games with the people that know them best.
Hey everybody, this is Patrick of Blue Peg Pink Peg, and I am here today with Isaac Vega and Jonathan Gilmore of Plaid Hat Games. And they are the designers of the upcoming game, Dead of Winter. And I thank you guys. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us, Patrick.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you about what for me is probably one of the most exciting games that is coming out in 2014. And honestly, one of the more exciting games that I've heard about in quite some time, Dead of Winter. And why don't you guys tell us a little bit about what the game's about, how its game mechanics are unique, and, you know, what the elevator speech, if you will, for Dead of Winter.
Well, Dead of Winter is a meta-cooperative psychological survival game in which you are playing as a group of survivors together in this situation where you guys have to try to overcome, but at the same time, too, you each have your own secret objectives that you're trying to complete while trying to work together with the colony. So it creates this interesting kind of narrative where you're trying to figure out what's working best for you and trying to figure out what's going to work best for the colony, because you're all are only going to win if you complete your secret objectives. But at the same time, too, as you're playing the game, these different crossroad cards come out, which allow characters to come to life, allow different players to make unique decisions, and allow for a lot of interesting interactions between other players on the board. And there's also a lot of interesting mechanics that are taking place at the same time to keep people engaged. There's cool die allocation that you get to go ahead and use your dice to complete different actions throughout the game. You're searching for different items that allow you to have different abilities and add them to your characters. And there's, of course, zombies that are going to be trying to take you down. And there's also the possibility of betrayer in the midst of you that's trying to work against you. So there's all these different things that are trying to simulate pretty much how would I actually feel and what would I actually be doing in a zombie apocalypse kind of situation, and how are these different personalities going to interact with each other, and how are we going to live through this? Because what me and John both wanted to do with this game from the get-go was, like, all of the other zombie games out there are run around, kill some zombies, run around, kill some zombies, collect some items, kill the most zombies you possibly can.
And be awesome.
And that is...
Being awesome and just blasting away zombies.
Right. And that is not at all what I ever connected with zombie stories. I mean, what I was connecting with was these characters, you know, how are they getting through this horrible situation? And, you know, avoiding zombies and avoiding exposure is number one thing in this game that you want to do. You want to avoid the fact that, you know, that you're, this horrible thing has happened, and you need to try to figure out how to survive through it. And
that's what
we're trying to accomplish with this game.
So it sort of takes the idea that, you know, in your, and I you know, not today, but like zombie side or a lot of the other zombie-themed games that are out there, and God knows there are plenty of them. You're miring into the waiting, you know, horde, if you will. That's the whole point of the game. But if you were really in this situation, your primary priority would be the fewer zombies, the better.
Right, exactly. It seems like in those other games, you're always in a situation that you'd always try to avoid. Which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that if people enjoy, but we wanted to explore something different, and I think we accomplished something that's very unique in the industry.
Right.
And, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, Zombie Side and Last Night on Earth are both excellent games.
Of course.
And Zombie Side, to me, is the board game representation of Left 4 Dead, the video game.
Yeah, okay, that's a good
analog. It's an action pack, wading into the zombies, blasting them away, you know, action, small rest, action. And we're taking more of the, you know, Romero approach to zombies.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, when I started reading about this, and, And you know, it did capture some Walking Dead, and I mean that, to be honest with you, a little more of the story arc that takes place in the graphic novels that they haven't necessarily gotten to on the TV shows. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but you know, that sort of the community that was evolving in Walking Dead, the graphic novel, it had that sort of I can't say it was derivative of that because they didn't feel that way at all, but it did seem to evoke the same sort of emotion in my mind that I felt when I was reading that series, you know, and later on.
That emotion is really what we're going for. I mean, I've been watching zombie movies and zombie media since, you know, I was a young teenager, and The Walking Dead comic book ever since issue one. I mean, when I first heard about it, you know, Robert Kirkman and his involvement in it, I was there. So that emotion is what we really wanted to try to capture.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you one thing, because you talked about the emotion. Is there any kind of model that you guys were seeking to replicate? And what I mean by that is, were you guys trying to make this board game feel more like a, you know, kind of have the open-ended qualities of an RPG, or maybe the open-ended qualities of an open landscape video game? Or were you trying to create something completely different?
I think our goal was really just to, like, simulate how it would feel to be thrown into this kind of situation.
Right.
How would these different people interact in a survival type situation? And I think as we explore the Crossroads series, we're going to continue to explore that with different backdrops.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying that was something that I'd heard, and I'm very excited about that prospect of sort of this guided improvisational storytelling experience framed in the context of a game, you know, sounds incredibly appealing to me. I mean, it brings forth for me all of the stuff that was appealing about RPGs, but in the same vein brings forth all the stuff that's appealing about board games, in that board games have a limited universe and a rule set that I can get my arms around. But when I play RPGs, you know, it's so complexly, you know, open-ended, it feels like it doesn't satisfy that for me, and this seems to sort of scratch both those itches. At least it appears to.
Yeah, and we definitely kind of wanted to. We spent a lot of time talking about back and forth about the psychology of survival situations, and we really wanted to focus on emergent gameplay. And that's a big word that people throw around about video games right now. And, you know, you have scripted story, and then you have games like Minecraft that really have zero story at all.
Right.
But you generate the story as you play it. And that happens a lot of times with this, like these unscripted story moments come up. I mean, there's incredible story moments with the Crossroad cards in this.
Right.
But there's even more stories that I have to tell and talk about with my friends and my game group and, you know, my wife and everybody else about these moments that happened without any guidance from the game.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, one of the things I was wondering about, because I have looked at some of the Crossroad cards in some reviews and in some other media that you guys have put out there, and I wondered, did you guys have a general narrative thread that you were playing out when you designed this? And by that, I mean, did you kind of play this out like a very complex choose-your-own-adventure for grown-ups? Did you have sort of, these are some story arcs that we want to develop or we want to make possible? When you started working on this?
Dead of Winter changed a lot during the designer process. Really, we can't really say that we had that kind of structured approach to the storytelling. Uh-huh. Really, we wanted players to create their own story as they went. What we were trying to facilitate was different situations that would come up that would create interesting decisions for the players to have, and that way they wouldn't be crafting their own stories as they went through the game. I mean, I took the Dead of Winter over to Ravenwood Castle this past weekend, and it was great to see such great reception of the game, so many people enjoying it, people playing it multiple times in their two-day weekends, and they would go up to each other, and they would tell each other the stories that happened in their game, and they would come up and say, That didn't happen in my game. What? Oh my gosh, this is so different. And it's like, oh my, every single story ended up being different. And I got that compliment continuously throughout the entire weekend. And that was great to see, that people were enjoying it so much that they just wanted to see, you know, another piece of what the game had to offer, storytelling-wise. And a lot of people were playing the same main objectives over and over again, and there are 10 different main objectives in the game, and they all have a hardcore version of those objectives as well. So it's for them to get that much in one weekend for how many times that game was played out of pretty much the same objective over and over again, you know, just speaks volumes for what the game can offer people.
So the point being... No, I didn't want to interrupt.
And I just wanted to say that it's just like, it's the people that create the story. It is the people sitting and playing this game that are creating the story. We didn't have a specific goal. We're putting the backdrop there for you, we're giving you the little hints to guide you in different directions, but I never know where the story's going to end up.
Yeah, they're all just little nudges.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so the point being, the replayability is limited only by the imagination of the people that you bring together at the table.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you one more thing, because I had also looked at some of the Crossroad cards, and this is there may not be an answer to this, but I noticed that a lot of them have the sort of... you know, they almost feel like the prisoner's dilemma in some places, or a classic Hobbesian choice. You know, insofar as you're placed at two options, both of them are bad, but there seems to be a pragmatic option and a moral option that you can pursue. And I use that term moral. Let's put that in quotes, because morality, I guess, especially in these circumstances and clearly in an imagined circumstance, is subjective. But that said, is there sort of a consequence, are the consequences geared towards sort of guiding towards a moral answer? Meaning, if you make a moral answer, you're going to produce a better result, or if you make a pragmatic answer, you're going to produce a better result, or is it entirely open-ended?
Go ahead, John.
It's really open-ended, and one of the things that Isaac and I, kind of went back and forth on originally, and we decided that, you know, we wanted a lot of the decisions of, do I do what's best for the group or do I do what's best for me? Because that, you know, that's really a big conflict that you see a lot in, you know, zombie movies is, you know, I can do this thing and benefit everybody, or I can just hoard all this food for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a fun decision in that situation to make people make and watch them squirm making it.
And a lot of the Crossroad cards put you at that dilemma. They put you in a situation where, like, oh, do I go ahead and go and expose all my people to possible getting bitten and getting destroyed? Or do I allow the colony to have that burden and me not have to deal with it? You know, and some of the Crossroad cards have two good things happening. And, mm-hmm. But one might be, oh, this is more beneficial for me in this situation. And one might be, oh, this is more beneficial for another player.
Yeah.
And, you know, those situations, when people are deciding on that kind of stuff, it makes for really interesting gameplay. And also with the sense of the possibility of someone being actively working against you, you're paying attention to those decisions, like, oh, is he trying to do this to benefit himself, or is he just playing it off like he's trying to help us and he's going to do something bad later? So it really is for interpretation. Every single person that's going to sit down and play this game might interpret someone's decision in a different way.
Yeah, one of the things I really do enjoy about what I've heard about this is the fact that there is this potential traitor mechanic, but because it isn't always present, in fact, as I understand it, it may not be present in a majority of the circumstances when you play the game.
Right.
The potentiality of that both replicates the real paranoia that would exist in this sort of setting, and it makes that paranoia ever present, because even when everybody's on the same side, you always are looking for that potential.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. I mean, that is the number one thing we wanted people to feel. We wanted them to feel like, can I trust my neighbor? I have, you know, I've been thrown in this situation. I don't know who these people are. I don't know what their problems are. And a lot of things come in through with characters. Character abilities have a really interesting way of bringing in narrative into this game because, okay, my character is better at doing this, but this services the colony way better than it services me in my secret objective. You know, should I choose this character to be part of the colony? Should I have him here? Should I use his ability, wasting an action die, to do something that may not necessarily move me towards my main goal, you know? Right. But people see those that information in front of you and think, okay, why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you making that decision, you know? And it keeps people engaged throughout the entire game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you one other thing. I've noticed, and I heard you guys talking about the Wonder Dog. And some of the amusing scenarios that arose out of his leadership of the group, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
And which brings me to the question. But then I also heard a story about somebody playing the game and their character had been bitten, and he knew that he was going to become zombified, I guess we'll say. He was infected, and at some point his symptoms were going to become manifest. But he was trying to figure out, do I sacrifice my character for the need of the group? In order to keep him going just a little bit longer, knowing that he's going to die, you know, and sort of, do I make that sacrifice? So my point being, I saw this sort of this duality of whimsy, potential for whimsy here, and then also pathos. And I'm wondering, do you guys feel like you struck a good balance as far as keeping light elements that people could laugh at, but also some more profound elements that could provoke a little deeper discussion and thought?
Yeah, I feel totally like we did. Go ahead.
I do too. And you know, it's funny you kind of touched on morality earlier, and you know, I don't want to oversell it or anything, but I mean, more than most other games I've played, I see people making decisions based on the morality of their characters and the morality of themselves than what's maybe the best move sometimes. And I think that's really interesting. I mean, there's times I had guys in my group locally early on when I was telling them about the game and we're making a lot of decisions that you know, just said, well, if I have a choice between everybody in the group winning and me not winning, I'm going to sabotage the group.
Right.
And, you know, so many plays later, and this same guy that said that before is making a huge sacrifice at the end of the game and making himself not able to win because he knew he wouldn't be able to, but trying to push the rest of the group to victory.
Yeah.
And that's not something a lot of people would do, but I see people making those decisions in a purely non-mechanical manner, but based on their own morality.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's kind of an interesting notion that the game can serve as in a fundamental way, we don't want to overstate this, but as a right. laboratory for that type of moral decision-making. You know, it's safe.
Right.
But it's also, it has an element, you know, you've invested something in the game. So those decisions have some consequence for you. And so it's an interesting way to sort of live those scenarios out in a way that, you know, you could perhaps take something a little more profound from, you know, not in every circumstance, but occasionally, you know, draw something out of it that might have a little more meaning for you.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me. My wife, who's not into role-playing games or storytelling games or anything like that,
right,
tends to just kind of slip into her characters in this.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because she doesn't like to step into that, you know, zone, but in a game like this, she's more comfortable with it because it's, I don't know if it's what it is that makes it more comfortable for her, but it's interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting that John said that too, because this past weekend at Ravenwood, we had a lot of couples show up to this event.
Uh-huh.
And they would sit down and play Dead of Winter together, and I had tons of husbands come up to me and say, oh man, this is awesome. My wife actually likes playing this game.
Yeah.
and these are women that are constantly with their husbands and playing different events, but normally they're playing, you know, lighter games or games that are more goal to their interest. And this is something that a lot of couples see that they can see playing together because it just engages them, and it creates an interesting banter in between them as well, because here they are making decisions, not trusting each other, thrown in the zombie apocalypse. They have these characters and trying to work together, but at the same time, you know, maybe they're betraying. And it's funny, a lot of the different kind of stories that pop up while couples are playing because they know each other so well.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I have one play that sticks out, and I'm going to try to keep it vague because I don't want to spoil some great moments for people.
Right.
But there was I was playing with my just a three-player game with my wife and one other friend, and we had a crossword came up, and it let us get some meat from a very questionable source.
Uh-huh.
And you know, food's important in this game. Food and morale are the two things that you have to really kind of one of the two. They're two of the things that you have to kind of manage. And she actually made us separate that pile of food inside the game from the rest of the food, and she refused to touch it for the rest of the game.
This is imagined chits of cardboard.
Yep.
That yep. she won't touch. I love that. I love how immersive that shows just how immersive this game is.
Yeah, and that was such a great moment for me that I'll never forget, because it was just such a funny. I mean, we made fun of it the rest of the night, but for her, it was such a moral thing that she didn't want anything to do with it.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing a little more about that and actually experiencing that within the gameplay. Finally, one other thing. You know, you guys touched upon this, but you know, could you speak expressly to, you know, we're a podcast about couples gaming. I mean, this seems like a game that is tailor made for couples play.
Oh yes, definitely. I think it's of all the games that I have made, it's definitely the best for couples. I think it, especially because the game can also be played in co-op mode without secret objectives, and you guys can try to get through a hardcore hardcore mission by yourselves. Yeah. You know, so it's interesting to take from play it in a group and then play it together. So, I mean, it can definitely facilitate some interesting stuff for couples as well as big groups. And I think it's just a really good game to immerse yourself in the storytelling. But also it has some interesting mechanics to keep you engaged while you're playing and make interesting decisions. You know, there are other games out there that have lots and lots of mechanics, but it feels very dry. And there's other games out there that are all about the story, but not very engaging mechanics. And for me, especially, first in the early parts of the design, I wanted to meld those two things together, you know, and because if you've played any of my other games, I'm very mechanics heavy.
Yeah.
So I like how those things can meld into a easy but also engaging experience.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, listen, guys, I really appreciate you guys taking a little time to talk to us about this. I had one final question for you. And that's not necessarily about Dead of Winter, but just generally, what are some trends that you see are moving forward? In which direction do you think board gaming design is moving as a general rule? I mean, I don't want to be unfair in that question, but, you know, I see there do seem to be trends, you know, that have come and go. Are there any trends that you guys are seeing, even, you know, whether it be narrative play or something else, any trends that you guys see in game design generally?
I'm working full-time at Plaid Hat Games now.
Right.
And we are constantly thinking about what's our next step. What are we trying to release? You know, where is the market going? What does it want out there? You know, and what do we want to give it? What do we want to deliver out to the market that's both fun for us and fun for the market?
Right.
And we're seeing a lot of people introducing board games to people that have never played board games before.
Yeah.
The market is definitely growing.
Right.
And, you know, the games like Ticket to Ride, Settler of Catan, those are the ones paving the way into people that have never even touched the board game outside of Monopoly.
Right.
You know, and we are trying to figure out ways in order to create more games that are creating more storytelling experiences, creating more ease of entry kind of games, but also bringing something out there that is engaging enough for the hardcore, the old school gamers.
Right.
You know, we don't want to leave those people behind, but we also want to be able to meld, you know, both types of players into a happy harmony. I think Dead of Winter does that. I think some other games that we have down the pipeline are going to be doing that. Mice and Mystics has definitely done that as well. We just want to keep exploring where we can go with that. And like you were talking about earlier, in video games, we're seeing a lot of narrative be important in gaming, and I believe that's going to be very important in board gaming as well. Seeing RPGs and board games become a little bit more intertwined.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely see more the kind of the board gamification of RPGs and the RPGing of board games, and you know,
right.
We're trying to get into this really really interesting sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah,
With really light RPGs and you know really light board games that let you tell a story, and I think that's an interesting.
Yeah, and with the Crossroads series, there's really no end to what we can do with this system. I mean, we can go ahead and explore tons of different types of stories,
right.
And different themes that people are going to be interested in. And we put a vote up on the website for what people want to see next. And all of those games that we put up there, we're planning on producing. And we would like to see what else we can go ahead and move into, what different themes that we can explore, because we think the Crossroads series can definitely support it.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. I think that's absolutely true, and that's part of the excitement of that game is the potential that it has for branching out into a broader sort of franchise. And we're looking forward to what comes from you guys.
Another thing I wanted to add real quick is that what we really want to facilitate in Dead of Winter and the other Crossroads games that come out is user created content. We want people to participate in the experience of Dead of Winter. We want people to do that as the Crossroads series continues. As soon as the game is available to the market, we plan on having a Crossroads generator on our site. So people can make their own Crossroads that are, you know, for their own groups or things that, you know, they think would be good for anybody who plays the game. And we want to see more people create more content for the game itself. So it's something that grows. It's something that lives within their community. And that way they can go ahead and make it more personal to them.
Right, right. Well, that's great. I mean, I like the idea of sort of, a community-based. I mean, you know, another game, Betrayal at House on the Hill. You know, that game is in my mind a little vanilla, but I do love the fact that there is a plethora of scenarios that are user created. Like that's its strongest component is not its design, but sort of the community that arose out of it.
There's companies that are fighting that right now, and I don't get that. Yeah. You know, I think that's a horrible position.
No. I agree. I think your game has to create community because it's going to do it one way or another, and why can't you know it makes sense for publishers to embrace that they can make a more immersive experience for their game players.
Exactly. I mean, we're living in the age where people can just they can pretty much just interact with someone on a screen.
Right.
There is very little walls in between the people creating content and the people out there experiencing the content anymore. And as much as that we can facilitate that relationship, we want to do that.
Yeah, moreover,
that's very important to us.
And if you facilitate that, you also own the IP, which is always helpful. In any event, listen, guys, I really appreciate you guys speaking to me. This has been a great conversation. We are very much looking forward to getting Dead of Winter to table, to probably playing it, digesting on it, playing it again, and then giving it a review because we think it's something that's really going to appeal to our audience. And in the purely selfish point of view, I'm really excited about playing it with my wife. So listen, guys, I appreciate all you're doing. We love what you guys are doing over at Plaid Hat, and thanks for putting out some great games.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the inaugural episode of Blue Peg, Pink Peg, Seventh Peg. Check in later for more Blue Peg, Pink Peg, Seventh Peg episodes as they become available. But as always, you can check out our bi-weekly podcast, Blue Peg, Pink Peg, during each Monday when it releases. If you want to hear more about Blue Peg, Pink Peg, you can check us out at iTunes. You can also check us out at Stitcher, Board Game Geek, Facebook, and Twitter, all by checking Blue Peg Pink Peg. Blue Peg Pink Peg is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Blue Peg Pink Peg is a production of In Your Air Media, all rights reserved. Blue Peg Pink Peg's theme music is written by Skavuvi and the Epitones.